The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It's 5 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 15th of May, 2026. You're very welcome along to the programme. We have our Friday panel with us. They'll keep us updated with their views on some of the big stories affecting the region and beyond over the last week or so. Over the last couple of days. We want you involved in the conversation too, though. 086 6025 000. That's the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 6025 000. You can give us a call either on 07491 25 000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. Let's say good morning to Leonard Watson. How are you getting on, Leonard?
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Good, yourself?
Good stuff, good, good. You're very close to the camera there, Leonard, which is great. This is fine, don't get me wrong. Also, we have Emma Gover, a.k.a. the Wee Donegal Mammy. Good morning to you. Emma, how are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. How are you? And congratulations on the nomination for your show.
That's right, two, in fact. We'll talk about that later. I appreciate
two?
That.
Congratulations on both.
But in the one category, right? So I'd have to beat myself to win, or we'd have to beat ourselves to win. But anyway... Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mont. Hi, Emer.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing great. What about yourself?
Very good. Can't complain.
All right. Yesterday we heard from Minister Alan Dillon that government fines for littering and dog fouling are set to rise from 150 to 250 euro this September. Yet recent figures show some local authorities, including Donegal County Council, are issuing zero fines per year. Is increasing the cost of a fine a meaningful deterrent if the public believes the chances of actually being caught are non-existent? And I will point out this is also new measures to cover fly tipping, etc. But, you know, the dog fouling is one that annoys an awful lot of people. So increased fines, but no risk of getting caught. That's what people might feel, Emer.
Yeah, no, it's like we go to run there in the morning on the show road and you're basically stepping out of the way of the dog dirt. And it is horrible. Do I think that increasing the fine is going to change that? Absolutely not. As you say, they're not imposed as it is. I think maybe cameras along the shore road might have more of a deterrent for people to lift it. I can't understand. And do you know, even people that are out walking with their dogs, you're always looking at them thinking, is it you? With, and then you see an awful lot of people do lift. So,
do you own dogs or have dogs?
My dog died recently.
Oh, well, I'm very sorry to hear that.
And I tell you, I didn't take him out walking for that reason in the town because I couldn't bring myself to actually get down and do it. So I brought him for the walk in the town. I just think it's, you know, he was a good dog. He was an old dog. He stayed about our house here. So,
but the point being is whether it was to avoid cleaning up or for whatever reason, you wouldn't take the dog out.
No.
But there are a small number of we always say it's a small number. Is it a small number? You know, is it a minority?
I think so. Okay. I'd say if I was to ask a lot of people that were in the town vicinity, they probably know a lot of people that are guilty of it. But I do think, yeah, they should put a wee camera up and that'll be more of a deterrent than increasing the fine. Like, sure, they don't even impose them. So,
well, as I said to the minister yesterday, it's understandable, say, for instance, the most recent jump I can recall is in parking in a disabled bay or a bay reserved for people with a disability. That does work because you know there's probably going to be a warden walking up and down the street and, you know, it makes you think and you go, right, I want to avoid that increased fine. But again, it comes back to enforcement and there doesn't seem to be any real plan as to how we deal with this scourge coming into the summer months.
It. Like, am I going to say if I actually see somebody with their dog doing it, am I going to pick up the phone then and ring, oh, I've seen him with his dog?
Would you? If we had a dog poo hotline, no?
No, I don't think so. And that's the thing, whereas if someone was in a disabled spot, it'd be a total different thing to me, you know. So, and I know they're two wrongs, but that might annoy me more.
It is interesting because, and this is not to challenge your personal views, I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, you talked about when you're out running and you can dodge the poo and all that kind of stuff. Like a lot of the complaints we get, Vision Island, for an example, or people in wheelchairs that might not see it. And you can imagine you're driving yourself in your wheelchair or, you know, you're walking and you can't necessarily see. What do you think, Emma Gova? Do you think this is going to make any difference unless something else happens along with the fine increase?
I think it might make a difference to the fly tipping because maybe people are more identifiable by that depending on what they've dumped. We know that people have been in the past located due to post or whatever that was in the fly tipping. But when it comes to dog fighting, no, I don't think it's going to make any difference because there's nobody there to see it happening. And you know, as you said, are we going to have a hotline for it? But can I just say, it is absolutely the bane of my life. I really, really can't abide it because I have a daughter in a wheelchair. And it's absolutely minging, excuse my language, this early in the morning, when you're out and maybe you've gone out in the car, you've gone somewhere, and then inadvertently her wheels go through it. You've got to find a way to wash the wheels before you can put the wheelchair in the car after she's got into the car. Mm. And aside from that, she really can't abide it either because you have to look at it this way. That wheelchair is like an extension. She would say to her, that's like an extension of her. It's part of her. It's not all of who she is, but she requires her wheelchair for day-to-day life. And it's the equivalent of you standing in it, which we all hate as well. Mm. And
standing in your bare feet because dependent on the type of wheelchair, you know.
Absolutely. And then she feels bad then because she requires your help to get it off her wheels. And then not just that, people with prams and people with young children who are running ahead of them. Or I have another daughter who's quite far into the autism spectrum and she's not always looking where she's walking. Mm. You know what I mean? And then you brought up Vision Ireland there. And what kind of strikes me about that is we had an assistance dog in the family. And sadly, he passed away last year at the ripe old age of 16. But he wasn't our dog, but he was from the extended family. And I remember talking to and then being told that when they're down training with their dog in Cork, and this is people who are visually impaired and people who are blind, they're taught how to clean up after their dog when they're out. Mm. This is people who are blind and visually impaired. Now, surely, if they can learn skills to clean up after their dog, an able-bodied person should be able to clean up after their dog, and they're just not doing it, and it's extremely unfair.
Interesting.
To the rest of the public.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before, and it is actually quite an interesting point. And of course, too, there is that danger, particularly to young people's eyes, of some of the bacteria that's contained within the dog stool, which can be really quite damaging. Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear, Letterkenny, you know, you're not just Main Street, but is it a problem on Main Street, Letterkenny, like it is seemingly in every other nook and cranny of Donegal, dog fouling?
Funny, Joe, Greg, I was just chatting to somebody last night. Seeing around Letterkenny, I think people are probably there's more people looking at you.
More eyes, yeah.
They're cleaning up after themselves. But then I was chatting to somebody yesterday and they were saying they seen a lady pick up the dog poo, put it in a wee bag and then threw it in the hedge. You know? So it was just as bad. But like, I would agree with the two ladies there. Like, you know, even there on beaches, you know, where the sand blows and then you have kids playing in the sand out there. Like, and a bit of crux for me, we go to these places and they say, you know, dogs must be kept on the lead. And then you see these dogs running around and they're, you know, they're not being observed. But until people start getting prosecuted, Greg, this is not going to change. Like, you know, until you start seeing things on Highland Radio or in the newspaper that somebody's been prosecuted, they've been fined 250 for their dog fouling and not cleaning it up, it's not going to change. We've seen it with the disabled base where the increased fines and people being prosecuted, it definitely has.
But just broaden it out. So say, for instance, in terms of people who say, have hedges that grow out into the footpath and it hits people, often visually impaired people in the face, people that don't clean up after the dogs, people that dump stuff out of the windows of the car, people who abuse parking spaces reserved for the disabled, and on it goes. Why can't we get through to them, Leonard? Why can't we sort of, what is it in them? Is it they say, you know what, you know, I only have one life, I'll do whatever the hell I like. Are they ignorant to the impact of their actions on other people? Like, what is going on in the human psyche? Because I don't think we can keep saying it's this minority, because if it is, they're very blooming active. Yeah. So what is it in them, do you think, that makes them not think of their fellow person?
They don't care. They've no moral compass, Greg. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I have a disabled bay right outside my shop, and I see people pull into that disabled bay and they've no badge on their car. Because at the end of the day, sometimes you can't see disability.
Well, I think I did pull into that one by accident once, I'm going to be honest with you, because it wasn't very well it wasn't very well identified for about 5 minutes. But anyway, go on, sorry.
But, you know, and you always kind of look for the badge. Like, but, you know, and then you see people coming down. Like, I was seeing the traffic warden going up to a guy one day, and this guy was parking it every morning, and he was actually arguing his story with the traffic warden. He said, putting his hands up and saying, I was totally wrong. He was saying, I was only going for a coffee. Like, you know, I was only 5 minutes. You know, that's what I'm saying. It has to be in you, Greg. Like, at the end of the day, even this thing about throwing rubbish out the window, or you see these videos of people dumping beds on the side of the road. You know, I don't know what kind of person you have to be to do that.
Like, you see, they're... When you get to large-scale stuff, there's never an excuse, but then you can sort of get into the space of arguing that maybe someone can't afford waste disposal or whatever. And that there's no justification for that, don't get me wrong. But this other random stuff, there literally is no justification. But broadly speaking, Emer, and it's going to sound like I'm making out that the four of us are saints, right? And we all have our weaknesses. But there does seem to be a lack of consideration for the impact of persons' actions on other people, and I don't get it.
Yeah, we were in Haldas 2 weeks ago, and just when you were talking about the dog fouling, and this guy came out of his walking along the boardwalk or whatever, and this guy came out of this wee small apartment with two monsters of dogs, brutes now, and he walked across in front of us, just right across, the promenade was here, and he walked across just a little stone area here, and the two of them did what they needed to do. Well, my God, it filled 10 bags. And he turned, and we were actually sitting down, this pier was beside it. He turned and he took them back inside. Two things I couldn't understand. If you lived in such a small little place, what do you do with two monstrosities of dogs like that? And then another couple came along walking a dog, and their dog was over, you know, smelling us. And I couldn't... Two things, how he could do it on his doorstep, but he did do it on his doorstep. And why would he have two monstrosity of dogs? So look, at trying to understand people's behaviours, we'd be here all day, sure. But it's just, there's no thought, no regard on who's coming after you. But yeah, we were just sitting there and nothing else to do, so I was observing and I was thinking, my God.
Yes, I don't know if this is a praise or criticism, but you have a knack for drawing very vivid pictures about dog mess, be it in Killybegs or on holidays, especially before breakfast. But you haven't actually said anything. It's just the way you can create this image in my head. But yes, Emma, you know, like, say, for instance, if you are out with your family and your daughter's in the wheelchair, do you see a lack of courtesy? Do people understand you would be impacted by maybe the misuse of disabled parking bays as well? It does make you scratch your head and wonder, you know, like, because we would do anything for each other in times of a crisis in this county. I think we're really good. But are some people just not really thinking straight half the time, Emma?
I think, first of all, as Leonard said, you know, with the disabled spaces, a providing person has a blue badge on their car. Like, if I am with my daughter who uses a wheelchair and she gets out of the car, there's, you know, nobody passes any remarks. But my other daughter who's further into the autism spectrum, 3 with autism, she'd be the furthest into the autism spectrum. She's profound ADHD, but she also has a physical disability. But because she can walk and because you can't physically see her disability, sometimes we get that look as if to say, why are you parking there? But she has very unstable knees, very unstable joints, and there's, you know, she has used a wheelchair in the past.
But funny thing is that is probably coming from a good place, ironically.
It's coming from a good place, and I would say that. And as soon as they see the blue badge, they're fine. I can't say I have ever been accosted about it, but I remember talking to my daughter once about, my daughter who uses a wheelchair, about the dog fouling. And you see, the thing is, And it's not me making excuses for anybody. It is lack of consideration for other people. But she would often say that unless you are in her position, right, unless you are relying on your wheelchair or your mobility aid to get from A to B, you can't possibly see it from her point of view. No, you should try and see it from her point of view. Don't get me wrong, you should. But she says, you know, little things that would irk her maybe wouldn't irk other people.
But the funny thing about that, Emma, and I'm not contradicting what she's saying, and what she's saying is spot on, but like every single one of us has somebody with a disability, a physical disability, whether it's born or acquired, or maybe it's through old age, you know, it's just but as I you get older, there's lots of, like, so there should be an
lack
awareness.
Of consideration. Yeah. And generally speaking, and I'm not trying to generalize anybody, don't get me wrong, but if you're comfortable with fly tipping, or you're comfortable with abusing disabled parking spots, or you're comfortable with not cleaning up after your dog, I've got to be honest with you. If they've been doing it for quite a while, I can't honestly see that someday a light bulb's going to go and they're going to go, shouldn't do that. It's not fair to everybody else.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to the minister. And I've said before, you know, the education side of things, the carrot doesn't seem to be working. Some listeners' comments here. Good morning, Greg. Who cleans up after the horses that are trained on beaches in this county? I'm not really quite sure where that happens or how it happens, but I presume that a horse owner should be. In relation to dog fouling, if the council put dog poo bins in public places, then maybe people would be more likely to clean up after their dogs. Ballyliffin Beach has these, and while there's some dog fouling, it's nowhere near as bad as beaches without these bins. And I get what that listener is saying, but you can get the bags that contain the poo and they're scented and you just take them home with you. I think you don't sort of go, wow, there's no bin, I'm going to leave this dog crap on the beach. You know, there should be something else, another option, personal responsibility. Another caller says there's no need to bring your dog on a 3/4 mile walk because when it makes a poo, you will have to carry that waste back home like the old days, keep the dog around the house. What's wrong with dog owners, asks another, that they can't pick up their dog foul? Our beaches and towns are ruined with dog foul. Bag it and bin it at home. Good morning, Greg. How much is the fine for horse fouling on beaches? Yeah, another one coming in relation to that. Might chase the horse fouling up sort of as a separate piece because it might be really quite specific. The story about dogs on beaches, I'm on a beach a lot, but I don't take my dog because they should not be on the beach. But all over Donegal, people seem to bring not one, but two dogs with them to the beach and let them off the lead, which is so wrong. But sure, the dog, he'll do you no harm. He's only 7 foot tall. He's only licking your face. It's what you kind of feel like when you're out there. Right, now, Bertie Hearn, back in the headlines again. He was caught off guard, you could say, secretly recorded, making some claims about immigrants, saying there's too many here, etc. So while his while Bertie Hearn claims his remarks about immigrants were just a critique of the system's speed, some commentators have called it a shocking doorstep detonation. That was no accident. Was Bertie simply saying out loud what many politicians and many members of the public are thinking privately, or has he fundamentally damaged the standards of political discourse in this country? I'll go to you, Emma Gova.
Bertie. He is always in the headlines and mostly for the wrong reasons when he is in the headlines, isn't he? I think, and I know I'm going to get lambasted for this probably, I think his comments were racist. And the reason I think his comments were racist was because I think it's absolutely fine to critique a system. Don't get me wrong. I think it's okay for somebody to say, I'm worried about school places. I'm worried about the impact on our healthcare system that's crumbling. I'm worried about the housing crisis. That doesn't make a person racist saying that. It doesn't.
I should have mentioned his comments. Sorry. He was recorded saying, the ones I worry about are the Africans. That he's concerned about the level of immigration and that Ireland can't be taking in people coming from the Congo as well as the next generation of Muslims in Ireland. Just to give it a little bit more context. Sorry, yeah. Emma, continue.
So the reason I have an issue with that is because he also said, I don't have a problem with the Ukrainians. He said that in the recording. I don't have a problem with Ukrainians. I want to state that before anybody comes. But once you...
So he's talking there, obviously, what he's thinking is culturally. So I presume he believes the Ukrainians and Irish culture is more aligned, and he thinks maybe the next generation of Muslims or people coming from Africa is more disruptive to the Irish culture. I'm only guessing, but that would be the only thing.
Well, you have to remember, too, first of all, I don't have a problem with Muslims. I don't. I've met many doctors who have cared for my children over the years with their complex medical needs who are Muslim, and I find them to be gentlemen and ladies. I've never had an issue with them. But the thing is once you separate and you say, I don't have a problem with this group, but I have a problem with this group, it dehumanizes the other group of people. And it creates a class, a system of these people are okay because they sort of look like us and they kind of have the same generalized way of living as us. And yet I'm not okay with this person. I mean, what's the difference between a person fleeing war in Ukraine and a person fleeing war in the Congo? What's the difference between a child facing genocide?
Talking about the impact on Ireland. Like, I don't know, and I'm not generalising, but I just want to tease the conversation out. Like, are Ukrainians more likely to integrate? You know, maybe attend the same schools, attend the same churches? Are we more inclined to see, you know, people of Muslim background, you know, congregate and socialise amongst themselves, and maybe even people with
Irish people do that as well. Like you look at America. Like there's a massive contingent of you know, lots of Irish centres in America, lots of Irish centres in Australia. Now, I'm not saying that the system is perfect. The system has been a sham for years. Don't get me wrong.
Well, let me ask you,
it's needed an overhaul for years.
Do you believe Bertie Ahern's...
Don't criticise the system.
Yeah, do you think Bertie Ahern's comments represent the views of a minority, or do you believe that if you went into any pub in Ireland and stood at the bar, you'd hear the same stuff?
Oh, you would hear the same stuff, but let's be very clear here. There is a small minority of people with very extreme views, right? And then you have other people who are pushed to the limit and they have their children going off to Australia or America because they don't see any future here for themselves. We have 17,000 people homeless. And I need to state, not all those 17,000 people are Irish, by the way, if you look at the demographics. But there's people worried about the waiting lists in hospitals, school places, special educational needs. I think it's okay to say, I'm worried about this system and can this system take that sort of pressure? I don't think that makes a person
Is it okay to, because we could get into a space here where anyone who has concerns about immigration or the level of immigration and the reasons for their concerns could be classed as racist. And I'm only posing questions because I want it to be a full, honest conversation.
Yeah.
Is if you see the dynamics of an area change dramatically in a short space of time, are you justified in expressing that concern to say that maybe, you know, the demographic has changed so drastically that that place itself has changed so drastically and I'm not comfortable with that and maybe there's too much of a flow inwards? Is that an appropriate thing to say or inappropriate?
When you are differentiating between the person's ethnicity, yes. If you say you're comfortable with taking white refugees, but you're not comfortable taking black refugees, then yes, that's you're judging that person based on their ethnicity. But when it comes to it, at the end of the day, it's 2026. You know, we're not living in the 1920s. Do you know? And that doesn't mean that I can't be comfortable being Irish. That doesn't mean that somebody, see, I'm not threatened by losing my Irishness by somebody else living down the street from me. That's
so
just
are
not
you saying,
the way I am.
But just to be clear in that, are you saying that if your Irishness changes or what being Irish changes culturally, historically, you don't mind that? or are you saying that the Irish culture and the Irish way of life is so strong that there is no threat to it?
I believe that the history of our country and what I wasn't born then, but what our ancestors fought for. I think that, you know, even when people move abroad, that their Irishness is ingrained in them, and I think that's okay. I'm not threatened because most of the people I know, right, who have moved here to Ireland, right, and most of the people I know who have emigrated to any country, right.
I understand where you're coming from, and we'll bring the other panel
and
in
they would
a
still,
moment.
But what I'm saying is, they would still say that they might be an Irish citizen, but they're Palestinian.
Yeah, okay.
Or they might be an Irish citizen, but they're African. Mm. And I think that that's okay. I think it's okay to say that I love living here and I'm part of this society, but I still identify as African or Middle Eastern. Yep. And I think that we're getting caught up in, you know, our Irishness being taken from us. And I don't think that's happening. Mm. I think that Ireland and the Irish people are strong enough to say, look, you know, we've gone to places and we have emigrated and we still hold on to who we are.
Our example of I understand where you're coming from. The example of the Irish going to Australia or America would be more representative of Ukrainians coming here, for right or wrong. Okay, that's just the way it is. So comparing Irish to going somewhere else is more akin to Ukrainians coming here than the issues, because you will know in America that they themselves are differentiating between Irish and, you know, Mexicans and people from different heritage. I'll come back to you. Eimear McGuinness, you heard Bertie Hearn's comments. I mean, at the end of the day, I think everyone needs to realise at this point that whatever you say, you potentially are being recorded and it could end up being, you know, used against you. That's happening more and more lately. But what is your view of his comments? And is he speaking, you know, for the silent majority, or is he...
To be honest, I listened to a good chunk of it. I might not listen to the last few seconds, but I listened to a good chunk of it. I think a lot of politicians, especially when you're out in the doorsteps, and did you listen to the woman that was speaking to him? I assume you were listening to it, Greg. So, you know, she kind of led him down that path. And a lot of times when they come canvassing to your door, as you know, they'll tell you whatever you want to hear, you know, to get your vote. I think there was a wee bit of that in it.
Yeah, he got very specific, though, referencing the Congo.
Yeah, he did. I know he did.
I mean, I listen, with all due respect, these are clearly his views. You don't go in with such a backstory just to someone at the door.
Then, you know, and then another day it will be, like, is he looking at statistics that we're not looking at? Do you know, it depends on what environment as well you're working in. There is an awful lot of, as Emma said there, we go into the hospitals, we have great doctors of other nationalities. We need them. We probably wouldn't have a lot of hospitals without them. But then there is also, and again, it's a small minority, but we have a small minority that come into our country and use our system and can't get hospital appointments. And I think that is what annoys an awful lot of people. Then you look at the crime rates and the crime figures, and was he going off that? I'm not excusing him, and he should know better because he's been in politics his whole life to say such things. But I also looked at him standing on the doorstep, and he looks so old and tired. Yeah. So I don't know. Is it his views? But there is a lot of people with them views, and it's for other reasons. It all depends, again, on how you look.
I've interviewed and spoken to people from other countries living and working here who themselves have concerns about the immigration policy. And often I think we presume that they all think the same, you know, and even how I said that it's great because everyone within every community, and we're all part of the community, have different points of views. But I think what we've seen, or I propose what we've seen in Britain, for an example, with the rise of reform, is that political parties, and maybe even us, don't realise that what Bertie Ahern said, as crudely as he said it, might actually be the majority view and not the minority view. And whilst that's being ignored, a political party like Reform can organise itself and actually become the voice for people, because those people feel they've been ignored by the mainstream. Is that a possibility, Emer?
It is a possibility, and that's what I'm saying. We, and in my role in my life, I don't get to see statistics of crime. I don't get to see statistics of our system being used, of our money. And I do know this from a particular person who would employ a lot of, no matter what nationality they are, but they basically, he has trained them up. He has gone through a whole system of given them a qualification, given them a job. And as soon as they get them papers, they're gone. And they go back home to that, and they can come back over and sign. Our system is wrong, and it probably wouldn't happen as much if it wasn't so easily accessible. So maybe that's where he was coming. I'm not defending him, by the way. But I always try to look at things from a point of view of why would somebody say something.
Can I just say that I agree with what Emer is saying. And I think that's the point I'm trying to make. Maybe you've made it better than me, Emer, is that, you know, you ever hear that saying, play the ball, not the man, which is what I'm saying is the system broken? Absolutely. It's absolutely broken.
Yes, but my point, I get what you're saying, Emma, but this is not a press release that was issued by Bertie Ahern. This was a conversation. My lead question is really, is this conversation more reflective of the national conversation? It's not becoming of someone with his political credentials, and he should know. But he didn't say this on Question Time. And you know, what I'm trying to say is this really...
He
wouldn't say that, and he would choose his words carefully, and he'd have five people in his ear telling him why he shouldn't say that. But
I think it's okay to, as you say, I think it's okay to say that the system's not working. It's okay to say that there are people who are coming in and claiming asylum who are economic migrants and do not qualify for asylum and shouldn't be coming in through that method. They should be applying for work visas if they want to come and work here. Like, there's no denying that. There is no denying that. But what I'm saying is once you start having a problem with one cohort of people, see, that's the problem I have, is that he said...
Yes, but we're all culturally, but we are, a lot of us are culturally different as well, though. And you know, we can get bogged down maybe on people's country of origin or their race.
Yeah.
But culturally, we can be very different. And culturally, not all cultures, there's no evidence that they can actually really integrate or they coexist, but coexist often in different spaces, some with more hardline views on things in life, some more liberal. You know, I mean, obviously he's referenced geography and he's referenced race to some extent, but, you know, there is a broader conversation there too to be had, is there not?
Well, no, absolutely, don't get me wrong, but I'm just of the frame of mind, and I know I'll be lambasted for it because of the current, sphere that this has been discussed in, is that I don't see the difference in a child fleeing genocide in Gaza and a child fleeing war in Ukraine. To me, somebody fleeing war and somebody, and I mean genuinely fleeing war,
yes,
and genuinely fleeing persecution, is a person who is genuinely
fleeing. We also can't, and I'm not defending Bertie Ahern, we can't presume those are the people he's talking about either.
Was he talking about that? Like, then you have
to.
See,
that's what I'm saying. When you get people who are abusing the system, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying the system is at fault here.
Yeah.
When you get people who are abusing the system.
But I think sometimes we are so quick to label people and mute them that we never get to the actual real conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I believe, and I've said this before, free speech is free speech at the end of the day. Even if it's something you don't like hearing, free speech is free speech. Providing that they are not, you know, inciting racial hatred or racial violence.
Okay,
at the end of the day, Leonard's entitled to their opinion.
Leonard's been waiting for his view. I'm sure he can't wait to get in on this one. Go on, Leonard.
Do you know what, Greg? I was over in Liverpool the weekend, and this is the part that kind of worries me. And I met a couple there from Texas, and she was from Texas, he was Mexican. And the lady went away to the bathroom. He goes to me, he says, "Can I ask you something?" He says, "Am I safe around here?" And I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Like, Liverpool's a good city." No, he said, "But I don't look like I'm from here." Like, and I thought that was so sad. Like, you know, it's just, you know, like, you know, we're getting into that area now where people, like, we need tourists, we need visitors, you know, we need people coming to this country to work. I know this was Liverpool, but listen, it's the same thing as here. Like, I play football, I train with people from Palestine and different. I don't really care what religion they are, Greg. You know, at the end of the day, like, I was just chatting with my wife last night. 100 years ago, we had an issue in this country where people couldn't practice religion, and there was uproar over it. And now we're thinking people shouldn't be allowed to practice religion. We cannot blame the system's failures on people coming into this country. Like, you know, we have a housing crisis and all that there. The health system's not working right. But that's not down to immigrants coming in. It's down to the system is not working right. I was just saying there to somebody yesterday, 50 years ago when Irishmen went to London or Liverpool and that, they were all seen as terrorists. Like, you know, we've got young black men coming to this country and straight away they're all rapists, they're all this here. Like, you know, and we're not learning from the mistakes of the past. Like, where every young Irish man that gathered in a crowd in London, they were all terrorists, they're all going to blow the place up. You know, we can't judge people.
No, but those Irish had passports and things.
Oh, listen, Greg, I know what you're saying. Like, at the end of the day...
I'm not saying it. I'm trying to tease out the conversation, right? I don't want to, you know, I'm just... I think we pick extreme examples all the time. And what happens is then even I'm afraid to challenge what one of you might say in case I'm being seen as racist, or if you had different views, I could be seen as being sort of really right-wing. I don't want to have that, but that's not what people are talking about. You know, and Britain at that time, you know, there were bombs going off left, right and centre in Britain. There was no justification for grouping everyone like that. That was absolutely horrendous. But it was born of a fear.
Yeah, that's fair. But Greg, at the other side, in the 80s, and you'll know that there, tens of thousands left Ireland to go to America and who lived illegally, like, you know. But there's no chat about that either. Like, you know, I'll say, like, during the famine, Greg, a million people left Ireland, went all over the world, like, because they had to get out of the country. Sometimes I look at these young guys and I kind of think, I don't blame them. They're trying to make a better life for themselves. Are they doing it the right way? No, they're not. But sometimes you can't blame people for trying to make a better life for themselves. The system needs to be better. Like, I've always said to you, Greg, that I think Donegal has taken in more than the fair share of asylum seekers. It should always been spread out. And this is the part maybe that people, I always say there's a middle ground out there. They're not racist, but they're getting a bit annoyed that, you know, there's too much pressure put on certain areas.
Like, I get where you're coming from, and you're spot on, because, you know, I would say to my sons, get out of here, do whatever you can to improve yourself. But where are their sisters and their mums and their grannies and aunties and...
Yeah, but it was always they're living at home, yeah, but I always think you can't blame somebody for trying to make a better life for themselves. Like, you know, they're not doing it the right way, but as you say... things was really terrible here. You were telling your young fella to go to Australia, go to America, go to France or something.
I'm saying to my daughters as well. I'm saying, you know.
You know, like I say, they never really look at the numbers of people coming in from the UK, coming from France. We're never really looking at them figures. Like, we're just looking
at... Well, that's because people have freedom of movement from those...
Yeah, but I'm saying them numbers could be huge. Like, they're still putting pressure on our housing system, you could say. They're still putting pressure on our health system.
Yeah, exactly. And that number is there, by the way. It is quite large. We're in the last segment of the Friday panel with Emma Gova, Leonard Watson and Emer McGuinness. Call us as the ordinary working, tax-paying, bill-paying for everything. People have basically the same views as Bertie Hearn. But, of course, the name-calling starts. An alien arriving now in Letterkenny would not call it an Irish town. Who's buying up the town now? Muslim teaching don't support your pride flag and 76 genders, says another. Yes, we are the silent majority and not far right. We, the working people, are paying for it all. But sorry, it's a terrible way to frame it. Emer, you do see, particularly with Jim O'Callaghan, that there has been a clear shift in government policy in this regard. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and oftentimes I'd be off the mind frame of there's too much of a shift. I do also think, like, we've talked there this last 10 minutes about Bertie's comments, I suppose, and our Irishness and whatever else. I don't think your general run-of-the-mill person, including myself, has any problem with anyone who comes into this country and does a day's honest day's work and integrates with us. But I also have to say that, was it the Australian Prime Minister at one stage, if you want to be in our country and work and inclusion and that, fire ahead, but we're not going to change for ye. Whereas I think we have changed an awful lot with our religion and everything else, too much. And, you know, we've tried to be more open-minded and everything. And I don't think that that's a good thing. I believe that...
See, there is always this presumption, I think. There's always this presumption that we are doing the right thing, or indeed that's what people who come here expect or whatever. I understand what you're saying, but we don't know that to be the case at all. It's just presumed, and that's the way we move forward.
I don't... What is wrong with everybody living their lives in a reasonable manner, as they see fit, having their own religions, practising them? We don't need to change and adapt our schools and our systems from something we always did, because there was absolutely nothing wrong with... You're talking about dog fouling and throwing litter and rubbish. It's because maybe they're the simple things we need to go back to, where children are taught what is right and what is wrong. And we seem to be moving away from all that because we're going to offend different religions or nationalities that are probably more majority in our schools now than they would have been years ago. That's fair enough. They're there. I have absolutely no problem with it, but I don't think we should alleviate from our cultures and our own ways of life to the point that we have.
And I think to some extent the government might have been shocked by the findings of that school survey they put out there. I think they might have been expecting a different result. I mean, obviously, you know, the Australian language was quite strong, but is that really the future, Leonard? Say, you know, this is our country, this is our way of doing things. You are perfectly welcome to come here, but, you know, you're joining this club.
Yeah, do you know what, Greg? I have no issue that at the end of the day, people come in. You know, at the end of the day, we have a way of life here, like there, and you want people to integrate into your way of life. Do their own thing. And
the lack of integration, we can look at examples of why that doesn't work. And it's got nothing to do with why. It just does not work very well if people, regardless of the background, do not integrate.
Yeah, but like Greg, there is, and you know, and I say I would know a lot of people who've come into the country, like, you know, doctors, and they have tried to integrate. Like, you know, I see some of the business community, they've tried to get involved with the chamber, and they aren't trying to integrate. But I definitely agree. We just can't change our whole way of life to suit certain cohorts. Like, you know, at the end of the day, you go to America, you go to Australia, France, they have a way of living, they have rules, they have laws, and you have to live and abide by them. Like, we just can't change. You're just a certain cohort of people. Like, you know, I see these videos up about marrying children at 14. Well, the law in this country says you can't get married like until a certain age, you know. And that's the way it should be. Like, the laws of the country is the laws of the country.
And my last word to you.
Yeah, I totally agree with Leonard and Emer there. You know, for example, that saying, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Like, if I were to go and move to Dubai or Saudi Arabia or... Yeah. Qatar for work, I would be expected to live by them rules.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, that should be the same here. I don't agree with... I think if you are joining this club, is the word you put it, then, you know, if you've chosen this as the place you want to live, then you have to understand that we have a culture and a society, and we have laws that you have to abide by. Other religions.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there is an opt out in the schools. We shouldn't have to change it. Don't get me wrong. I've nothing wrong with anybody who's a different religion. But if you don't want your child to learn religion in school, if your child is not a Catholic, you have the option to take that child out of the classroom at the time that religion is being taught. And I'm quite happy with my child. I want my child to learn religion. My children are Catholic. I don't have an issue with people who aren't Catholic, but I don't see why we should change that system that has been around for years. This idea of taking communions out of schools and doing them privately and everything else, it's always been, you know, at the end of the day, in order to, I think that's the point I was trying to make earlier, in order to say I am accepting of another ethnicity and another culture does not mean that I have to get rid of my own.
Yeah, I get you. You don't. Yeah, OK. Emma Gover, a.k.a. the Wee Donegal Mammy, thank you very much indeed. Leonard Watson, look after yourself. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And also Emer McGuinness, manager of the Donegal Mall. Thanks, Emer, as always. Look after yourself.
You too, Greg.
Have a great weekend. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we're going to be talking sleep. We have Dr. Olga Mikulish is a respiratory medicine specialist and founder of the Northwest Sleep Clinic. She'll be in studio after 10 a.m. taking your sleep questions. Listen, how many of you had a good night's sleep last night? I wonder. Now, just to let you know, the latest episode of the Greg Hughes podcast, can't say my own name, is released today at 11 o'clock. And we've got an interview with a very interesting lady, Miranda Rosenberg. Her story is a very interesting one, from her early time in the United States to, I suppose, a very strict upbringing, a relationship that turned out to be an abusive one, and also then how she went on to become an advocate and a support for other people who've been the victims of domestic violence. It's a very interesting conversation. She's a very, very engaging lady, and that's available for you on our website, highlandradio.com, on Spotify and on iTunes / Apple Podcasts for you from 11 a.m. And if you're listening on the latter two, Spotify or Apple, please give us a subscribe, give us a like, maybe leave a comment or a rating. It's all very much appreciated. We've a whole back catalogue of very interesting conversations and some very interesting conversations to come as well in a wide range of different spaces. Coming up on this programme very shortly, Dr. Olga Mikulish will be in studio. She's a respiratory medicine specialist and founder of the Northwest Sleep Clinic. She'll be in studio after 10 a.m. this morning taking your sleep questions. What is a good night's sleep? How many hours do you need? What happens if you can't get off? What happens if you wake up and you can't get back to sleep? What happens if you're tired 12, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon? What's all that saying? And can it be fixed? Is it just something that you live with, you endure? What about snoring? Is that, you know, why do you snore? Is there any way around that that might give you a better night's sleep? Maybe give your partner a better night's sleep. We're inviting your questions, and don't be constrained to some of the examples I gave you. But, you know, sleep is one of the most important things we do. I think it's one of the most important things as it relates to your health. And I think, too, sometimes we can get caught up on how much sleep we need and then can't get to sleep. There's lots of different things that can go on. So there are different pieces of advice that can help, and there are also treatments as well. So any questions for Dr. Olga, get them into us right now. We're already very busy on the phone lines. It's been a cracking morning in terms of your interaction. Keep it coming. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. We'll read your questions to Dr. Olga, but if you can actually express them yourselves and have that conversation with her, it might even be more beneficial to you. So feel free also to send in your voice notes, 086 60 25000, and we can play them that way as well. Right, thanks very much to our guests in the first hour. A lot of you getting involved in the conversation. And listen, I'm going to read some of these comments, and you can decide yourself what space they come from. But these are just people listening to the programme. And by the way, before we do go on actually to the comments, I just want to say a massive thank you to all of you who listen to the show. You will have seen you know, other radio stations down the country nationally that took quite a hammering in the recent listenership figures. And you know, there's many different ways you can twist them to try and put a positive spin on them. It happens all the time, all right? But anyway, as it relates to this programme, very genuinely, you know, we've seen year-on-year growth in the programme. In some quarters, it's gone up 16%. In other spaces, it's gone up 8%, 10%, 12%. In other places, it's, you know, stayed really, really strong. But the bottom line is the reality, by any metric, there are more people listening to this show this time, this year, than were this time last year. And we don't take any of that for granted, and we really, really appreciate your support. It's support. It's one of those shows where there's a lot of conversation, there's a lot of me, and I suppose you can either like it or loathe it, but lots and lots of you like it, and you tune in big numbers. We're the biggest show in Biggest show in the county by a stretch, and we appreciate that. And we're all part of the One family, so we're all part of this journey. And a big thanks to all the sponsors, too, that stay on board throughout the course of the year as well, because, you know, we don't get license fee money per se, though there are different funds now where some of that license money is channeled to independent stations. But we don't get the same license fee or in the same way as RTE might do, for an example. So we really appreciate your support. And also, too, we're really excited. Yesterday was a great day because we got, you know, a really positive set of results, not just for us, for the station as well, too. But obviously, I'm in this slot, so I'm going to speak about this show. And a big thanks to Caroline and Shannon as well. But we also have been shortlisted for two awards from, I can't remember, what's the name of the organisation again? The Law Society of Ireland. Okay, they have this big awards thing for how legal matters are discussed on the radio, or how you cover legal matters on a radio show. And we've been shortlisted twice for a big thing in Dublin next month, which is really nice, isn't it? So that's great. And that's not just for us, that's for all of you guys as well, because we'll be hopefully flying the flag for Donegal in the northwest down there. So on those two counts, yesterday, for the most part, was a good day. Now, to some of your comments, sadly, it's the majority that are here abusing the system and the minority who are working legally. Anybody who lives in the Letterkenny area can see that. Now, statistically, there's far more people who are given work visas than aren't. So that might be your perception in a particular area, what you feel, but statistically, there are way more people coming into this country working legally. They've got work visas and they're working, integrating around the country. There are some that are abusing the system. There are those then that are sort of amplifying that abuse of the system. And unfortunately now, there's lots and lots of people that are here working, trying to better themselves, contributing to the country now, that are being the victims of abuse, because the lesser group that could be here abusing the system, their position has been amplified to the point whereby everybody's being judged the same. So unfortunately, I'm not contradicting you, but the majority of people coming here are coming here legally to work with work visas. I'll get you the exact stats in a moment. When politicians, councillors and spokesperson NGOs are surrounded by their own bubble, pushing their own agenda, they're in a bubble, and the majority of people living in the real world outside that bubble are not happy with the changes in their community. Another, good morning, Greg. We aren't living in 1920, but we are bringing in people from countries that are still living in basically the Stone Ages. That's what Donald Trump had. Donald Trump described Iran, isn't it? These are very, they're coming from countries that have rural areas, they have poverty, they have massive cities that are 21st century. But you see, this is this perception to label them all as if they're coming here from the Stone Age, which again, you know, it's not a very rounded point of view. And I say that with absolute respect. I get where you're coming from. But to say that they're living in the Stone Ages because they have a little bit of a, or have a major difference to you culturally, is not helpful. Does your commentator know what happens to women in Muslim countries? A few Muslims are okay, but once they become the majority, he may get her hijab on. This is this fear that the country's, the attempt to take over the country, which is, doesn't seem to be the case. But anyway, Greg, remember that the nationality of people who committed crimes were not registered. I don't think that is still the case. Right, lots of you in relation to that, of course. I'll do three more here on Bertie Hearn because such was the reaction. Irish have moved all over the world and have improved themselves and their area. If you look at every major city in Europe, it's like a city from a different continent. The speed of change is shocking. Greg, unfortunately, that girl's on a different planet. Tell her to walk down Letterkenny Main Street at night on her own with her dog and get her to call in again to see how uncomfortable her walk was. Now, would her walk be uncomfortable because of a perception or reality, if you know what I mean? I don't know. I haven't done it. I don't have a dog either. I'm not being smart. But, you know, sometimes we have a perception of safety versus, you know, a genuine risk. The Gardaí would say there's no increased risk in crime in Letterkenny. Another caller says, Bertie Hearn was 100% right. The landscape of a country can't be changed overnight. Ukrainians, well, recurring as I've been responsible for very serious crimes, by the way. I can't really read that out because it's not factually true and it casts an inaccurate view of the situation. There have been quite a number of Ukrainians. When any nationality is represented in the country, there's going to be a level of crime within that community, whether it's the Irish in Australia, Ukrainians in Ireland, or people from it. That's part of it. But unfortunately, you seem to have drunk the Kool-Aid, where you're given this impression that it's only a certain group of individuals that are responsible for crime, and ignoring the fact that I know for a fact there have been Ukrainians that have been sentenced to very long prison sentence for very serious crime here. Could that lady tell us what Ireland will be like in 40 years? Can anyone? What Bertie said wasn't racist. He was stating that people from a completely different culture, they're not all doctors and nurses moving into a small country like Ireland. It will change it forever. Just look at most European cities in Europe, that is, major cities. The locals are now in the minority. It's nothing to do with colour. It's to do with preserving our own identity and culture. And I'll tell that woman Bertie is in the headlines for the right reasons this time, and the majority of people support what he said. Has she no social media? Well, please don't use social media as your barometer for what the public think, because you might find that you've already found yourself in a group of people, whatever your political views are, that think exactly the same as you, because as soon as a row starts, everyone blocks each other and find themselves in the company of other people with the same views. Dogfouling also really got you riled up today. He's highlighting more cameras and people will be more aware of them and be more careful of where they dump. But the issue is enforcement. It's like the speed cameras. Everyone knows where and slows down and then speeds up again. The story about dogs on beaches. I'm on a beach a lot, but I don't take my dog because they shouldn't be on the beach. I read that one earlier. I can't believe we're still having this conversation in the 21st century. Let's be honest here. This is a cultural problem, not a social issue. The Irish have never had a good reputation for hygienic practices, whether it's dog fouling, littering, or illegal dumping. The term the filthy Irish didn't come from nowhere. Wow, okay, that's very strongly worded. And I think if we were to say that of a different nationality, there'd be uproar. But anyway, I live in the Glebe in Letterkenny. There was quite a lot of dog poo. I used artist chalk to circle around the poo and write, "Your dog, your poo." It got rid of the problem. Another place had a sign, "You're on camera," and it stopped people from doing it. It was so bad that we couldn't walk on the footpath at night. Wow, a bit of community action, though. Seems to have done the trick there. Another, I think that dogs should be banned from graveyards. Where I live, people bring their dogs into the graveyard. I think this is very inappropriate. People are dead. Majority of them could be dog lovers, though, and would love to see the dogs coming. I own two guide dogs, and when I went to Cork for the dog training on how to handle them, at the time I was partially blind, and we were fully trained to pick up after the dog. So if we could, there's no excuse for able-bodied people. Both my dogs were gifts from God and changed my life. Thank you for that. Very interesting point. I never really thought of it that way. And, I mean, maybe to those of you who are dog owners that allow your dogs to poo, you know, people that use guide dogs who are visually impaired clean up after their dogs. You know, what a gift your vision is. You know, why not use it? Would be a suggestion. People who are spouses of the owner of the blue badge often use that badge to use the disabled parking bay. They are just as bad, if not worse, than those who don't have a badge. Who polices it? If it's not your badge, don't use it. We always can jump to conclusions as to who owns a badge and who's entitled. I would find it remarkable if my partner had a disability and would have been, presumably, if that were the case, saying, "Oh, I went into Letterkenny today," or "I went into Bundoran today and someone was in the disabled parking bay and I had to come home." I would find it almost impossible to think that then I would get into that car, use their badge and do exactly the same thing. Is that really happening, or are we presuming? You know, I know people who on the face of it look very able-bodied. You know, they don't look like they have a disability at all, but they have a badge and they have a badge for the right reasons. So as long, you're perfectly right and a good call out, as long as we're not jumping to conclusions. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Olga Mikulic, who's a respiratory medicine specialist and founder of the Northwest Sleep Clinic. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How did you sleep last night?
Amazing.
Did you? How important is sleep?
It's crucial to our life, to our well-being. And I'm really glad to talk today about this. And thank you for this opportunity, Greg.
Mm.
I just want to say sleep is not a pause button. Sleep is a very active process where our bodies repair itself with different cells, when different waste from the brain getting rid of, we probably heard about beta amyloid, just to prevent dementia, Alzheimer's dementia, when immune system gets repaired and getting strengthened, and when we have our special hormones like growth hormone, about 75% produce of this hormone produced during sleep, and this is crucial.
So these are things that are actively happening while
It's actually happening every minute, every second. Yeah, even while we're talking now, it is happening. Our body's repairing our cells. We have 35 trillion cells. 35 trillion. It's equal to like national debt of America. But the about 80 gram of cells produced every day, new cells. Some organs do it more frequent, like in more speed than others. Brain and heart's not doing it really well. So we don't repair our brains and our hearts. But we do repair all the time. We do. This process is more active during sleep.
Mm.
So if we really want to, our recovery, we want to get rid of waste from the brain, we need a good, really good deep sleep.
Yeah, I think it become like if you had a robot, right, there's a period of the day where you'd put it on charge, you would check its joints, its circuits, and all that. So I suppose to some extent that's a little bit like we are. Quality of sleep, though, right? So, you know, say there are two people, they go to sleep at 10, they wake up at 6. One feels fantastic. The other doesn't feel so. But they've both slept. Quality of sleep. Within the world of how important sleep is, how important is its quality?
This is crucial as well. There are different phases of sleep. There could be light phase, there could be deep sleep, there could be REM sleep. They all have different purposes. Again, some of them, they're dedicated for emotional recovery. Some of them where our cell recovery going more frequently. Again, it won't be really focusing on very, very strictly on phases of sleep each night, because it could vary from night to night. It varies from person to person. But the whole idea is that sometimes quality of sleep is bad because of disease. And this is where we need to interfere, because people can not even have chance to go to deep sleep because they're obstructing their airways and their bodies stop getting oxygen and they are waking up before getting ever chance to go to deep sleep.
What is happening when physically, what's happening when the airwaves become obstructed? Is it that you get to a point in sleep where your muscles relax? Or, you know, you no longer, you know, take the weight from your I don't know. So what is happening? I know it could be in different parts of the respiratory system, but generally speaking, what is happening when someone, all of a sudden you start hearing, oh, there's the snore?
There are two types of sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea and central sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea, about 80%, 85% of all sleep apneas. And this is exactly when mechanical cause for stopping breathing. And it's because of anatomical changes and obviously muscle relaxation and discoordination between brain and muscles, sometimes with fluid composition, fat composition. But this is literally when there is blockage in the airways, usually when tongue goes backward and stops air to go through the main breathing pipe. And body then in the stress reaction, just really fighting for life. And the body thinks that this is massive danger, danger of death.
Mm.
And then the deep breath taken against closed airways when the pressure in the chest going wrong direction could affect heart and vessels and blood pressure. So that was happening. It's literally a blockage in the airways. Due to anatomical physiological changes.
So, I mean, I presume then, you know, more exercise, weight management are all going to help. They're going to be factors in improving that. But if it persists, is there an alternative between, you know, just trying to be as fit and healthy as you can, and then the sleep apnea machines. Is there somewhere in between that people can get a better night's sleep? Because a lot of people find all that very uncomfortable and maybe want to see that as a path of last resort. But so can people actively do stuff or get something done to them to alleviate that?
First of all, we need to make sure this is sleep apnea,
okay,
because there could be different other reasons. For example, 50% of people who snore, they're just snorers, but 50% will have sleep apnea.
Okay.
If you look another way, all people with sleep apnea who do have sleep apnea, about 80%, 85% will snore, 15% won't snore. So it could be just simple snoring. But if somebody has obstructive sleep apnea, this is a disease, it should be treated.
So that's where you might gasp.
You may gasp, and there could be pauses in breathing, and you will feel tired during the day, and your concentration will be poor, and brain fog, like lack of energy, difficulty in making a decision, this type of thing.
So,
and then,
so just the 50% before you move on. So the 50% that are just snoring, in inverted commas, they're, I mean, it's not ideal, but fundamentally that's just the noise then. They are...
That is just noise. And that is not disturbing them as much, but it is disturbing parts.
And if it's up here in the nose area...
Yeah, it could be fixed with the when you're fixing problem with the upper airways. Then some, and very very interesting, in even for obstructive sleep apnea in children, because the upper airways obstruction more common reason for sleep apnea in children. Surgery is the first line treatment for
them. Before we go back to that other 50%, I see I'm being bombarded with these adverts where there's stuff you put on your nose and it opens up your nose, straps that keep your chin up in place, mouth guards that you put into your mouth. Is any of that, does any of that serve any function to deal with any type of snoring?
We suggest for snoring solution advanced mandibular devices.
What's that?
A device that you put in your mouth. It's similar to a mouth guard, and there are two different types. One type is molded by the specialist dentist to people's own teeth. And obviously there is a certain amount of teeth you need to have to be this device to be able to work. But then this is really, really effective, because it's there's special mechanism in the device which will bring the chin forward and tongue will follow. So it's not only excellent treatment for snoring will be gone completely, but also for mild sleep apnea. Back to your question about any other solution for management of sleep apnea. And you absolutely rightly pointed, lifestyle changes with weight management. It's very good way to start, but it takes time. And in meanwhile, people should get treatment. So for moderate and severe obstructive sleep apnea, CPAP still gold standard.
What's still gold standard, sorry?
CPAP, the machines.
Okay. Oh, CPAP, of course.
Continuous positive pressure ventilation. And now they're very silent, they're small machines, and we have very different masks. So again, we can manipulate pressure, we can give different masks just to make it more comfortable for people. Sometimes you cannot even feel the mask on the face. Depending what we will see in the sleep study, if it is what we call positional sleep apnea, when it is present mainly when people sleeping on their back, we can use positional devices. Nothing on the face. It's something around your neck which will help you not to sleep on your back. Without waking you. And again, the advanced mandibular device for treatment of mild to moderate obstructive sleep apnea. And surgery, when in adult population, we're talking when, for example, there are large tonsils. Mainly. We don't use anything else at present. But the tonsillectomy does improve things as well.
Okay. Dr. Ogur, as important as sleep is, and I think everyone recognises that it is, but it's always good to hear from an expert. When people sort of are on the pathway to trying to resolve it, do you think that when they start talking or we start saying you need a sleep study, people go, I'm not doing that. You know what? I'll just either give me a CPAP machine or I'll just batter on the way I am. Do you think that maybe sometimes, you know, people don't want to go through that process as essential as it is?
I think think this is the wrong approach because you need to know what you're dealing with. As I mentioned before, it could be simple snoring, or it could be when people don't snore, they just feel tired, they have daytime symptoms. It could be nothing to do with sleep apnea at all. So there's CPAP won't help. And secondly, the investigations now, they are all home-based. It's very, very rare you need to come to the hospital
now.
Very
interesting. See, I think that's very interesting information that people might not be aware of.
Yes, we're bringing now very sophisticated sleep studies in people's house. First of all, it is convenient. And secondly, people sleep better in their own homes. So it doesn't take long. It's a one-night test. And our team will help to adjust equipment on people. And it's very simple. People can do it themselves. And we'll have information after equipment will be sent back to us. And then based on the information from the sleep study, we will be able to see, first of all, if it is sleep apnea or not, what type of sleep apnea, what is severity of sleep apnea. Then a lot of other information, depending on the details of the sleep study, we may say on the quality of sleep, stages of sleep, any evidence of restless legs. What is the oxygen, generally speaking? Do you lack oxygen regardless of your sleep apnea? Some people don't have sleep apnea. They have hypoxemia during the night. What is your heart rate doing during the night? So there is a lot of information we're getting from the sleep study.
Okay, fascinating. I have a newborn baby who is 9 weeks old and sleeps very little. I expected this, but I'm sure this level of non-sleep isn't normal. He also seems to be hungry all the time as well.
This is very common questions from parents. I'm adult specialist. Yes. I won't be able to comment on children. All I could say that when child doesn't sleep very well, their parent doesn't sleep doesn't well. So that this way it will be affecting a whole family, and that will affect the treatment as well. I won't be able to provide any comment on the children.
Yes, because not least because there could be a whole myriad of reasons.
Exactly.
And it's actually probably good to get checked with the GP. Not that there's anything wrong, and it's very possible, not in the form you want, but that baby might be getting all the sleep it needs. Who's to say? But just what I would suggest is keep a log of when the baby's sleeping and take that to your GP. It might be good information. I'd say it's one of the first questions they might ask. Is dreaming a lot good or bad sleep? I feel like I dream a lot, says a listener.
Nightmares, obviously, the problem.
Yeah.
And when people have nightmares, we do look inside, and sometimes we do extra investigations in addition to sleep.
But generally
studies.
Speaking, dreaming...
It's normal. Mm. It is normal. This is the way our brains process the information that we did obtain during the day. Sometimes dreams will be more vivid. And interestingly, in combination with other symptoms, as a behavior during the sleep, that could be dangerous or could be like a warning symptom. But generally speaking, dreaming is normal. Vivid dreaming is normal. Nightmares and vivid dreaming with abnormal behavior during the sleep is abnormal.
Do we know how long we dream for at night? Because, you know, you wake up or you wake from up from a dream and you think that it's happened all night. Through sleep studies, do we know how long people dream
usually,
for? Or?
Yeah, usually our dreaming happening during the REM sleep study phases. And again, because there's stages, some people have three or four stages of this sleep during the night. More commonly, it's happening toward the morning, early morning hours.
Okay, fascinating. Lots of people messaging in about restless legs. Is there a one-size-fits-all answer to that? Restless legs are disrupting my sleep at night, or when I'm just about to fall asleep, I have restless legs. What's happening there?
Yes. So, again, first of all, if it's as a condition, it should be confirmed on the full sleep study.
Rather than a self-diagnosis,
Rather than self-diagnosis. A few things to look at will be, to begin with, again, medication. Some of them, for example, when people take in water tablets, diuretics, when some salts getting washed out, that bringing amount of salts in the muscle down and giving cramps. So something like that.
Is magnesium recommended for that? Is it magnesium?
Potassium.
Potassium, magnesium. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that is a self-help again. But you you really need to probably talk to a GP about doing even essential blood tests just to make sure you're not deficient in different salts.
What happens when you're it feels like you're just about to fall asleep and you wake up then with a jump? What's happening then?
Sometimes that could be because there is obstruction in the airways. And this exactly when, as I mentioned, 15% of people, they don't snore, but they have sleep apnea. And the reason they don't snore, they don't have time to snore. Because the snoring and these noises people make during obstruction is vibration of the airways. But sometimes when airways close like that very, very quickly, there is no time to vibrate. It is imminent closure of airways. Sometimes that could be, and then you're waking up. But process of falling asleep, it could be different for different people. Like not everybody switch off. When they're falling asleep. So it when you're a little bit up and down during falling asleep, that if generally quality of sleep is good, it's not worrying.
Yeah, a couple of people saying they've been referred by their GP to have their sleep analysed. Is there a different, like that's publicly, they've been told there's a long wait list. So you, is that the case that on the public system there can be a long wait list? Do you do it privately? Can GPs refer to you? What's the story there?
There are still two pathways, public and private. And yes, and unfortunately, there is a waiting list on public.
Some people have been told it's months and months.
Could be years.
Yeah.
And again, because of demand. And this is just reflecting how serious the problem is. Northwest Sleep Clinic is a private clinic, and we will provide as a private facility, and the referral is from GP, and there is email on the website, or it will be sent to every GP.
Is it very expensive? I don't want you necessarily to divulge your business model, but is going private, now it could be the very best money you ever spend. Is it incredibly expensive?
No, we're trying to make it affordable to people. Okay. And then we always look at not only at cost, but value, which it brings to people, what kind of problem you avoid and what you're gaining immediately. And it's very interesting, but treating sleep apnea, it's one of very few areas in medicine, which is where you hear people saying, I didn't know what normal is. When they come to you after you start on CPAP treatment, and they have the quality of life that they should have if they didn't have disease.
Can you ask the doctor about balloon sinuplasty therapy? When I lay in bed at night, my sinus blocks and I can't breathe through my nose. I get up in the morning and I feel unrested. I have used spray to help nostrils stay open and it does help. I saw videos on this therapy before and I'm wondering, is it safe and does it work? Thank you so much. Anything that may help, please. Now, this might, I'm not sure if they've got a GP diagnosis or they're diagnosing themselves, but what would your message be to that?
That probably will be questioned to ENT surgeons, and we do work, we collaborate with ENT specialists.
But have you seen success?
But we never refer to these operations. And as I mentioned, the only surgery that we do refer with very good success is tonsillectomy. Other type of surgeries are more used in different countries of the world, but we don't use them here in Ireland yet.
My husband snores so badly, I feel like moving to another room. Can I do anything to stop him? You're going to have to encourage him to go and get it looked at.
Exactly. And then we can help easily. And we need to see if it is sleep apnea. It is one thing. When it is just simple snoring, we can help as well.
I'm a 35-year-old and I find myself waking up at 3 and 4 in the morning and unable to get back to sleep. I've done the no tea, the no water, etc. after 6 p.m. Sleep drops on my pillow. Nothing seems to work for me.
This is very, very interesting. Sleep doesn't, we don't optimize sleep at 10 p.m. when we're about to go to bed and trying to take magnesium and thinking that the brain will switch off and we will sleep soundly till the morning. Good night sleep starts in the morning. It starts when you wake up. We all live with them in a rhythm, like day, night, they have seasons. This is the way we function in our heart, systole, diastole, and same with our circadian rhythms. And we have to live with our circadian rhythms. We have small gland in the brain, pineal gland, where melatonin is produced. So, and that hormone responsible for good night's sleep. And we start produce it in the early, program to produce it in early morning hours. When you wake up, in the first 30 minutes after you're waking up, you have to expose your eyes to the natural daylight for about 5-10 minutes. If it is a little bit cloudy, then a little bit longer. But that will help the brain to understand this is morning, we are awake, and then in 12 hours, it will be nighttime, it will be sleep. So it will be, it's what we call circadian rhythm. Everybody have a little bit different timing on circadian rhythms. We can help with that as well. But we have to be in harmony with our circadian rhythms. But that is what's happening in norm. Sometime when people wake up at 3 in the morning, it could be sign that something else going on. It could be maybe people depressed. Or sometime it could be just overstimulation of the brain during the day. And again, how do you deal with that? We have to prevent being on constant kind of on button. So there are certain rules. You can find one which works best for you. I like 20-20-20 rule. After 20 minutes work, you have to look somewhere 20 meters from you for 20 seconds. You really give your eyes, your brain, little pause. You cannot just work, and trying to relax in the evening time. This won't work.
Okay.
So it's written.
You have to work on it throughout the day.
You have to put your body in the rhythm. And that, in this natural rhythm, a little bit different to everybody, but you have to kind of try to work with the avoid overstimulation.
The fellas are getting a bit of a hammering in the comments. My husband drools in his sleep. What could be causing that? Out of his mouth. It's just, I presume, his mouth's just relaxed.
Look,
and it's just...
I think this, if it is nothing else seriously going wrong, and the drooling doesn't persist during the daytime, I probably won't be really, you know, very focused on that. But if anything else going on, for example, if there is extra sweating, right?
Yeah.
Profuse sweating still could be with drooling.
Yeah,
drooling
you.
Means muscle relaxed. That could be sign of sleep apnea. So it's something, if anything else going on, yes, just get checked.
Again, this is one of those questions with multiple answers, but just really, I suppose, your initial reaction. My heart rate drops to 42 beats per minute at night. Is that good or bad on the face of it?
Again, I probably won't be given direct advice on that. Generally speaking, I will give general answer, and always good to check it with your cardiologist and your GP, because, as I said, it's not only nighttime, it's daytime as well, and symptoms and everything else. But at nighttime, we do drop blood pressure and we do drop heart rate. And we do see that in the sleep studies as well.
I mean, if that person's running 20 kilometres a week, or if they have a sedentary lifestyle, the answer is completely different.
That could be different, exactly. Yeah. And that's what we expect. But it's interesting. We worry more when that is not happening at night. When somebody comes to you, and we have so many referrals from GPs when patient doesn't have drop in blood pressure during the night, or patient on monitor have a very high heart rate during the night. It means that their cortisol level is too high during the night. Again, for reasons... because there is obstruction in the airways, no oxygen going down, obstructive sleep apnea, we need to treat it.
What about daytime napping? So if someone's having a power nap, 10, 15 minutes here or there, is that a sign that they need supplementary sleep? Is it a sign that they're not getting enough sleep? Is there a...
It depends. So it could be nothing serious, but it could be when it happens all the time, and when something else, when concentration is not good during the day, when people fall asleep during the meetings, when they fall asleep when they're talking to somebody, then that could be what we call increased daytime somnolence. But remember, that could be different reasons for that. And obstructive sleep apnea, only one reason, insomnia, which is not good quality of sleep, or when somebody just don't have enough sleep. When you have like 3 hours of sleep, that is just not enough. And then you need to get your power nap during the day. But in combination with other, I mean, mention about stop bang, and its abbreviation for when to worry about possibility of sleep apnea. So S is going for snoring, T going for tired, being tired during the day all the time, including your power naps. O is going for when somebody observes pauses during the sleep.
Mm-hmm.
P going for pressure, high blood pressure during the day. We think that 50% of people with uncontrolled hypertension, when their tree medication and sleep and blood pressure still not controlled, do have sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
B is going for BMI more than 35. A is age above 50. N is neck circumference more than 40 centimeters. And G being male gender.
Okay.
When you have three or more of these parameters, then very high chance you have sleep apnea.
If people are referred to you, do you know if they can be reimbursed by their private health insurance?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to say Dr. Olga is an absolute outstanding doctor. She goes above and beyond for her patients. I want to wish her all the very best with her new Northwest Sleep Clinic. I've no doubt it will be a huge success and so badly needed in the Northwest. We're so lucky to have Dr. Olga in Donegal. I'm a very grateful past patient. I am one of Dr. Olga's patients and I'm on the sleep apnea machine. The difference in energy levels is crazy. I used to take afternoon naps and I have a whole new lease of life. I'm now like a new man with my energy and I would highly recommend it. And that is one pathway that was recommended for him and is working very well for him. But I think really what we've learned today is, you know, don't presume anything. Go and speak to the experts and it might just be, in inverted commas, simple snoring. You may not snore and you might have sleep apnea. You may need one of these machines. You may not need one of these machines, but we aren't the experts, so we have to go to one. If people want more information, Dr. Olga, how do they get in touch with you?
As I said, there's referral via GP. And we also, we did a very successful launch of Northwest Sleep Clinic at the end of March. And we can see big, big interest. So we plan to do educational meeting in the future. And I just really wanted to use this opportunity and to thank my team who helped me to organize the launch in such successful way, who are Magella and Gavin Sweeney, Leanne Murray, Ocean Kelly and Pascal Blake. And I wanted to thank people who helped on the day of launch, PJ Sweeney, Ollie Murray, Margaret McGarvey, Wendy Dunn and Bernie McFadden dos Santos. I really saw big interest. And I think awareness of sleep disorders and particularly sleep apnea should be brought further.
First, yeah.
And we were planning to organize this.
Super. And just for clarity, it's through GP referral only.
For now, yes.
Okay, no problem. Just to be absolutely clear.
Yes.
But you can get all that information from northwestsleepclinic.com. Thank you very much, Dr. Olga. I just opened my phone, Facebook. Every single advert now is about sleep apnea or CPAP machines. Do not tell me the phone is not listening to you and then gearing adverts based on your conversation. I've done no searching on the phone. They listen and then they target us with ads and they claim they don't do it. It's crazy. And that's where we leave it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone, until we chat to you again on Monday morning at 9.